You knew of the cloaking device that we have developed. You deliberately violated Romulan space with a blatant spy mission by order of the Federation.
We've been all through that, Commander.
We have not even begun! There's no force that I can use on a Vulcan that will make him speak. That is a fact. But there are Romulan methods completely effective against humans and human weaknesses.
You would not resort to them, Commander. They would prove ineffective against the captain.
Then they will leave him dead. Or what might be worse than dead. But I will know your unspoken truths.
Let her rant. There's nothing to say.
I cannot allow the captain to be further destroyed. The strain of command has worn heavily upon him. He's not been himself for several weeks.
That's a lie!
As you can see, Captain Kirk is a highly sensitive and emotional person. I believe he has lost the capacity for rational decision.
Shut up, Spock!
I'm betraying no secrets. The commander's suspicion that Starfleet ordered the Enterprise into the neutral zone is unacceptable. Our rapid capture demonstrates its foolhardiness.
You filthy liar!
I am speaking the truth for the benefit of the Enterprise and the Federation. I say now, and for the record, that Captain Kirk ordered the Enterprise across the neutral zone on his own initiative and his craving for glory.
I'll kill you! I'll kill you!
He is not sane.
Now, Whom Pods Destroy.
Welcome to Whom Pods Destroy, a Star Trek discussion podcast. I'm Terry, and I'm joined, as always, by Graham.
Hello.
And by Derek.
Hello.
What is that t-shirt you're wearing, Derek?
It's the Starfighter t-shirt. You know, we went to see, you brought me along to see Starfighter.
Oh, right. That's from the Last Starfighter.
Yeah. Last Starfighter.
Oh, I really ought to have recognised that. You big Last Starfighter?
I've seen it.
Oh, you've seen it?
Yeah, no. I saw it back in the 80s.
You haven't?
I haven't revisited it.
Oh, right, okay. Isn't that funny? Because it's quite an important film for me, some reason. I couldn't tell you why. I mean, it's a lovely movie. But it's not it's not outstanding. But it's a really nice, cosy film, a nice 80s warm movie that makes you feel happy and comfortable.
And we were in the Prince Charles.
We went to see it at the Prince Charles.
They were very comfortable seats at the time, which they've since ripped out.
Replaced with like less comfortable seats. But they've moved those comfortable seats into the upstairs cinema.
Uh-huh.
So there they are there now. So you get a more comfortable experience. Anyway, we're not really here to talk about The Last Starfighter or indeed the seats at the Prince Charles Cinema. But I'm sure there are podcasts out there for both, frankly. And if you're out listening to this, then do get in touch. We're here to talk about The Enterprise Incident, a third season episode of the original series. And the reason why we're doing this episode, this is the first of two episodes we're doing. We're going to be doing this one, and the next episode we'll be doing This Side of Paradise. And the reason is that both episodes were written, or in one instance, rewritten by the great Dorothy Fontana. And we want to mark this because Dorothy Fontana left us. She passed away towards the back end of 2019. And we want to mark this because we are a original series podcast, ostensibly. And Dorothy Fontana is one of the main voices and influences on the original series. And one of the... to use the term in quotes, founding fathers, I would say, of Star Trek in general. And I don't believe, and it's controversial to say in the slightest, that Star Trek would not be how it is were it not for the efforts and skills and talents of Dorothy Fontana, including her numerous scripts that we've done. Graham, I mean, certainly a pioneer and a guiding light for Star Trek and the original series for the first two seasons, at least.
Oh, certainly. Really, most of the universe-building episodes of the original series had large amounts of influence from Dorothy Fontana. She really was the driving force of building up the Star Trek universe.
Yeah, I mean, she built up some sort of, pillars that that everything, the franchise that exists now of Star Trek, which is continuing on, is built on a lot of the things that she's put there.
Yeah, especially Jones to Babel is probably the key one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Seems that she does a lot of stuff with the alien races, really. She bigs them up and puts a lot of backstory, and especially Spock.
Yes.
Spock's history is a big thing.
Of course, he is a cornerstone of the franchise, even to this day, a character that's relevant to this day and still portrayed and written into new Star Trek to this day is Spock. And
certainly, he's the one theme that runs throughout everything.
This episode, The Enterprise Incident, is very much focused on Spock, and it's a romance.
Mm-hmm.
Romance, love story, sex. It's kind of, well, it's a spy story.
Yeah, very much.
I love spy genre fiction. Yeah. I mean, we all do. Everyone in this room loves spy genre fiction. And one of the reasons why I enjoy The Enterprise Incident so much is because it's a spy story in addition to everything
else.
Well,
the title itself reminded me of the old Man from U.N.C.L.E. titles.
Yeah.
Because it was the, The Enterprise Incident, and obviously it's like all of the affairs that the Man from U.N.C.L.E. did. So, yeah, it's a spy story.
Yeah, and all the better for it. Because the main focus of the whole episode seems to be the... Is it an interrogation? Is it a seduction? Is it... We don't know. It is all of those things. But it is great. The interplay there is fantastic.
I was watching it yesterday. I watched it yesterday in my lunch break. And I really, really enjoyed it. And funny, it was the first time I'd watched the remastered episode ever. I'd never watched the remastered episode of Enterprise Instance because it has been some years prior to yesterday that I saw it. But we'll talk about that aspect in a moment. But I mean, I was just so enjoying the way that Spock was. It helps when you know what's happening, and you're just thinking he's completely playing her. But also, I thought the subtlety, the manner with which Joanne Linville, who plays the Romulan commander, plays that role. The cleaner print helps to see the subtleties in her acting. And how she is really taken with Spock. She's really into him and really madly wants to have sex with him.
There's a real sexual tension between the two is
very, very apparent.
Also, it's quite interesting because the thing is, she's actually a mature woman.
Yes.
She's not like a lot of TV.
That's a great point, especially at the time. When you contrast and compare it to a similar scenario in Cloudminders, and that's one that doesn't have that level of tension in there at all.
There's no energy going on there at all.
That's just basically a prelude to sex. In the Cloudminders, this one is something different. Yeah. There is a tension. There's an edge to it.
Yeah, no. There is romance going on there. Yeah. But firmly laced with sex. Like this is the thing. Like these, they really do want to jump into bed with each other, and it sells the story and it sells the deception to the audience as well, because it's if difficult, isn't it? Because how do you sell this? This is the third season of Star, well-established series. We know Spock, we know Kirk, we know what's happening, and we think this has got to be some kind of ruse. Is it really like this? Even if you're watching it for the first time, you're thinking, well, that surely...
Yeah.
Surely Captain Kirk hasn't, he must be operating under orders. Yeah. Spock hasn't betrayed.
Only the second episode as far as the release date is concerned.
Take yourself all the way back to the when it's first transmitted, and lots of people probably don't watch Star Trek regularly and might well have been going, oh my God, this is a big turn of events. What's happening here? Yeah. And may well have gone in. And I think a lot of that would have been down to the quality of the performance between Nimoy.
I think they're playing around because, this episode's really interesting because it starts off with a McCoy voiceover introduction, which actually tilts it slightly. If you're a normal Star Trek watcher in the 60s, it's like, this is new. Something else, your ears will prick up because it does play differently. And straight away, Kirk's character... He's basically a jerk off again, but straight away, not there's no lead up to it. You go straight into it. What the hell's happening with Kirk?
He is Captain Burke, isn't he?
Yeah, Captain Burke.
Yeah, he's a jerk.
But that whole slightly echoey voiceover, the log that you've got there, that's very much a Freiberger thing, isn't it? The new producer and the new style. it's going back to Cloud Miners, it's very similar to Spock's
voiceover
in that way, although it doesn't have the cutscenes to go with it, but it is very much, that's a very much a third season thing.
Yeah, it is very much, and it does feel very much like a third season episode, doesn't it? Can we talk about starships? We don't talk about ships much.
Yeah,
do
go
we?
For it. Yeah,
can we
yeah.
have a little bit? Odd thing about this is actually the first appearance of the Klingon D7.
Yes, arguably.
But or that is to say, it was the first appearance of the Klingon D7.
Yeah.
But it's a weird one, yeah, because they weren't released in production order.
No.
So Elan of Troius, which had yet to be transmitted at that stage, was actually the first appearance of the Klingon D7. But after the remasters came out, they put a D7 into Errand of Mercy in the first season, which then made that the first appearance of the Klingon D7. But actually, in terms of production, then listeners, if you're for Starship historians among you, you'll already know this, of course, that the first appearance of Klingon D7 is actually Enterprise Incident there, but it was actually produced for an earlier episode. Anyway, the reason why I'm pointing this out is because the Klingon D7 first appearance was actually as a Romulan ship in the Enterprise incident, because I assume probably for budgetary reasons they decided to use Klingon D7s and say, well, we can't really afford to just dig up where's that old model of the warbird. Oh, it looked probably a bit tatty. I thought, well, actually, rather than do that, let's just use these D7s.
And this no D7 one's gonna remember that.
No one's gonna care. But they said, well, they felt they had to say, had that moment with Scotty saying, well, that's a Klingon ship. You know, well, we look back on it now.
It's
and
a nice accident, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a happy accident. But in the remastered one, there's one more.
Yes.
They've replaced one of the D7s
with a
warbird.
Okay, I was looking.
Which is interesting.
Yeah.
Right, you know.
Yeah, and it creates a nice mix, and it's actually really well done, actually, I think, in the remastered one.
Yeah, the remastered one is really gorgeous. Yeah. I mean, it's a lovely and clean. They do quite a good job, I think, of adding a little bit of energy and excitement into that final. So let's talk a little bit about the plot of the episode. The setup is probably about 10 minutes into this podcast and we've not actually spoken about the setup, but Kirk's gone mad, or he's suffering an emotional breakdown, and he then takes the ship into Romulan space and then is captured, and then that is all set up. I mean, it has got that kind of Man from U.N.C.L.E. / a bit of Mission Impossible thing going on there. It's not out of place, is it?
Oh, no. So, especially not with the Mission Impossible vibe there.
Yeah.
No, that's a good call. I've got a crazy take on this whole episode.
Oh, right.
Okay.
So, time for your crazy take.
So time for my crazy take. I wonder if it's worth bringing in right near the end. Actually, yeah, it's to do with the climax. So maybe we'll talk about that, the climax, in a little.
Yeah. Okay, well, in that case, let's dwell a little bit more then.
I think we all have crazy takes on this, actually.
Yeah.
Do you? I'm not sure you've got a crazy take you want to raise now.
Well, not straight away. I mean, I think as we unfold...
Everyone's holding back their takes.
We have to unfold the plot.
Yeah, we have to unfold it. Because it's a spy one, so you have to go...
Okay, all right, fair enough. So, I mean, are you able to reconcile the setup for that? I mean, knowing what you know about Star Trek and you know.
Oh, well, if you know about Star Trek, you know about sort of Shatner's overacting and the way Kirk is. There's a perfect shot with him screaming at the
Return of Tiberius.
That sort of thing. It's a case as a first time viewer, you wouldn't really get that, but for us, and actually we love it because
would have made a hell of a trailer, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Kirk dead. You know?
Yeah. There's actually a lot of stuff goes on in this episode.
It
is actually a cracking episode.
It builds up fairly slowly before they go over to the ship. So you know they have that briefing and in the conference room, and Spock sort of confronts Kirk, and McCoy, of course, is completely out of the loop. And even with Scotty in there, and nobody knows what's really going on.
Well, it's nice that you have a nice ensemble there, and especially Scotty actually being, you know, of sort of front and centre as well.
Yeah, because he plays quite a key role in things. And I mean, there's also that element of trust, isn't there, in your staff? Kirk and Spock at the time are the only people who know the plan, but they are banking that McCoy will behave in a certain way And if he behaves consistently, then there'll be, because there's all kinds of things that could go wrong with this plan. Yeah. And indeed Scotty as well, knowing that Scotty's not going to just like turn the ship around and leave.
but they're not going to let him in on the thing.
But they can't let him in on there.
Because in case he sort of slips one, you know, especially if he's on the source
again. And especially if he's on the
source. You can't trust him.
Yeah.
You can trust him on the bridge, but you can't trust him with the open drink cabinet.
Well, thanks to the magic of editing, like when McCoy calls Scotty down to sick bay, what actually happens is, you know, Scotty is away for 20 minutes because he's nipped to his quarters first. He's
for some green.
Swig of green. And he's gone back in there, whoa! And then he thinks, oh my God, I've hit the sauce too hard. And Captain Kirk, not only is he alive, but he's got pointy ears and he looks like a Vulcan.
Got the DTs again.
He went alive. I'm really hitting it very badly. You know, I need some time off. So they get on board the ship, and then the whole deception plays out.
You didn't mention about the snotty commander.
Sub-Commander Tal? Yeah. Did you want to talk about Sub-Commander Tal?
Well, with his perm and his sort of like...
Yeah.
But also, the thing is, once he sees Spock, after the first introduction to Sub-Commander Tal and the Enterprise through the viewing screen and seeing that, you know, they have a Vulcan on board, you know, and sort of like, and I think that there's a bit of sort of sexual tension again with Tal. I think he fancies Spock.
Do you?
Yeah. I think that sort of like, you know, there's a bit there. I think there's a lot of hot Spock in this episode.
Yeah, I mean, I think
lots of desire for
it. I think this is a definitely a Dorothy Fontana thing as well. Yeah. I mean, there's no kind of any sort of like societal barriers in terms of sexuality don't apply. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, they're obviously heavily filtered, but yeah, no, I mean, I've got a take on that for the next episode. And actually, I do have a bit of a take for this one as well. But again, I will leave it till the end as well. We'll leave our takes. Just have to remember to include them. That's the only thing.
Got three climaxes in one episode.
I know. Can we
show you how good it is? Mm.
The other interesting thing, of course, is the introduction of the cloaking device. This is not the first, because it's not the first time we've seen a cloaking device. We haven't seen any of them at all.
I'm sorry, they're invisible.
that's one thing.
Yes.
But like the cloaking device turned up in Balance of Terror, but they didn't talk about that.
Mm.
No. They said, oh, what's your theory? Or my theory is that they have a cloaking device. And say, well, actually, you've already know this because you had... But again, this is the anthology nature of Star Trek and how that's why it's important not to get hung up on continuity canon because, you know. So, the plan is obviously that it's all a big ruse for them to go and steal the cloaking device, although we don't know this yet. But it's quite a nice way to drop that in. So, well, how did they just pop out of nowhere? But of course, actually, just thinking it through, that's all part of it. They knew that there was a clone because they were there to steal the bloody thing.
Of course it is. Yes.
But it's just interesting. I suppose what you could say is that others in that briefing room would have gone, well, yeah, we know about the cloaking device.
Duh.
We saw one a couple of years ago. Yeah, we were literally here. You know,
when a checkup on them.
But so I said, well, okay, fair enough, we'll let that one go. But feasibility of the caper.
Yeah.
I mean, it is relying on an awful lot of things. I mean, the circumstances around Kirk's death being what they are, I mean, that is still quite a difficult situation to rectify. Do you think that, in fact, Spock took an opportunity to do his phony death grip thing as a kind of as an ad-lib, that actually the plan was to get McCoy over and then hit him with some drugs to simulate death, like he did the old Triox compound, like he did... in a mock time. I think that was the original plan.
No, I think that definitely the plan was for Kirk to get McCoy over by throwing himself against that screen.
Yeah.
You know, because they've got those on the Enterprise anyway. Yeah. So they know what they're like. But then, so he's not going to just jump against the screen by accident.
No.
Yeah,
no, he's deliberately done it. And then he's like, we better get somebody over here. But then at that point, then...
Yeah.
McCoy is clued into the plan.
He would be, wouldn't he?
And I suppose, but I guess no, because they must have thought, well, what we're going to do is we need to get Spock down here, and Spock needs to be the guy to deliver the killer blow.
Yes.
Yeah.
In order to then demonstrate that he has switched over, that he's now a traitor, that he's now a Romulan.
That is always the thing about a caper like this: is that everything is all part of the plan. or everything can be seen to be part of the plan.
Yeah, yeah. But it could, I suppose the fallback plan might have been, well, look, I mean, if we can't orchestrate this situation, then you'll just have to hit me with some drugs and kill me and fake kill me.
Mm-hmm.
But it was quite good the way that they handled that, and then the way that they brought him back as well, because, McCoy did say, you count yourself lucky they decided not to do an autopsy, because, then that really would have been the end of him. But there was so much, it's high-stakes episode, isn't there? There's just any number of things could have gone wrong with this caper.
Well, and from the first thing, right, it's a high-stakes episode. They must have extra intelligence anyway about this whole thing, because if... this is playing out, I mean, they're relying upon Spock's sexuality and sensibility for this episode.
Is that the plan now? Because they couldn't have known. They couldn't have known the Romulan commander was going to be a foxy lady.
Because the thing is, if they didn't have that in the plan, then basically Spock is going to go up with a bloke. Well, and do the finger jiggy thing on the bloke.
Some commander
a
bold episode of Star Trek, and that's exactly what it had done. Your job, Spock, is you have to seduce the commander.
Yeah,
that's the only way this can work.
You don't take the sexual dimension out of it. Okay, what your job is, you have to demonstrate to the Romulan commander, whoever they are, the Romulans, that you're moving over to the other side.
Yeah,
as it turned out. Yeah. The Romulan commander was female, and there was an immediate...
Yeah.
I mean, in fact, if anything, it messed with the plan, because when Kirk was waiting for the coordinates to beam over, he was waiting too long and had to go over there early. He had to go over there without the coordinates because Spock was too busy, basically, humping the commander. So,
I think I'll give you my hot take on the episode.
Yes. Good.
Okay, this whole episode is a massive failure for Starfleet.
Go on.
They escape with a piece of duff technology.
Yeah,
because they never are able to use the cloaking device, and they can't even work out how it works so that they can see cloaked devices, whether they be Klingons or Romulans. So they've obviously stolen a duff piece of technology. Well, of course it's a duff piece of technology. It's the head of Nomad stuck on the top of Sargon.
That's Sargon. I know.
And the thing is that it's easily carryable, easily portable. You can put it under your arm, and then you can walk off with it.
So you're saying I'd like to think
there is an extra, there's a bonus scene somewhere where the sub-commander has just seen the Enterprise disappear, and then it's the final scene of the episode.
I know where you're going.
And I can't really, he just sits back in his chair and goes, I can't believe he got away with that.
Yeah. What? That.
The fact that, like every true spy thing, where everything is all turned around and it's all double play, the whole thing is that the Romulans are playing Starfleet throughout the whole thing, and they've just dragged them into this whole thing.
No, I had a suspicion that was going to be, as well. I thought that there might be a Romulan spy on board the Enterprise.
Yeah, or that there is a Romulan, there's a member of the Tal Shiar in Starfleet headquarters.
Who's feeding them all this information about what the actual thing looks
and
like.
And steering them towards this setup.
Yeah.
And so it's a double bluff. And we'll give them
and what a great episode that is.
Yeah, it is a great episode. Dorothy Fontana wrote a sequel to the Enterprise. It's called The Enterprise Experiment. It was published as a comic book by IDW. I read it yesterday. And sadly, there's none of that in there. The only thing that does work in there is that the cloaking device is duff. It doesn't work.
Right.
They can't make it work, and in the end, they kind of get rid of it. And interestingly, I remember reading my Star Trek role-playing game source book back in the 80s about the cloaking device, and they said in there they couldn't get it to work. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if they had conversations with some of the people there. Said, well, what do you reckon happened to that cloaking device? You think we never saw it again?
Put into a crate somewhere.
And just left there to rot. But it is a funny cloaking device, isn't it? Because I was looking at that thinking, that's Nomad's head and that's Sargon, isn't it? Or maybe it's Henoch. It could be Thalesa. But either way you look at it, it's
definitely Sargon.
It's genius. It's genius production design.
Well, it's genius, that sequence when Kirk is in this room trying to find out where the cloaking device is, and it's just that thing is just there.
No.
And the thing is that he does his Kurt Fu on the bloke, and the bloke just like looks to the side.
that's really clever.
See, that was really the first thing that said to me, they're setting you up, mate. Completely setting you up.
That's a really obvious look over there. So. What, you mean this thing?
Yeah, with a big lit up sign and saying also, cloaking device.
Also, when the Romulan commander and Sav Commander Tal go into engineering, into the cloaking device room, in inverted commas now, and they go in there, and then Sav Commander Tal goes, "Oh, look, Commander, the cloaking device, it's missing." And like, they all go, "Of course it's missing. It's a big thing that's no longer there."
And everyone says, like, possibly...
oh, yes, so I see. It is. Oh, no, it's missing. And Spock, meanwhile, is like, "Oh, everything's going according to plan." And he's the one being played.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, I think that would be amazing.
And this is what Dorothy has put here for it, you see.
She has given us this.
To see the story and sell it.
Yeah. And so, I mean, this is the story that just keeps giving.
It is.
And it's all because of the initial quality of the story that we can extrapolate this gorgeousness from it. I mean, what else is there that we need to talk about on this? I mean, are we ready for your take yet?
Well, I mean, I've sort of gone through a little bit of my take, because what would have happened if it actually was a bloke who was the commander of the, because, you know, then you drop Spock in it, basically.
Yeah.
But you do, you know, my take would have been, it's a case of they were playing each other. I did think that they knew more on both sides, as we've just explained.
Mm.
There would have been more information there, because they must have had a lot of, like, intelligence on this. And that was very similar to my take.
Yeah.
You know. But what we can go, you know, I mean it is, as we're unwrapping this episode, we can see lots of really good bits. Obviously the interaction between the commander of the ship and Spock is, you know, there's lots of, again, more mythos about Spock, and obviously Spock's line through this is the old thing about, like, you know, she know the connection between the Romulans and the Vulcans is expanded upon a little bit more.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, the Romulans, she wants to know a bit more about Vulcans, and, you know, and so on, and there's these myths that they have, which she already knew about, you know. So, you know, you're not supposed to be lying and all this sort of stuff. And of course, he's lying through his teeth, the whole thing, you know.
The Tal Shiar of pushed Star Trek, Starfleet strategic operations with this notion that Romulans have a perception of Vulcans that is based upon the best parts of them, the most noble, the fact that Vulcans don't lie, when in fact they do lie, or they can lie. The Vulcans, you know, are have integrity, and that isn't, all of these things aren't necessarily true. They might be true about the best of Vulcans, but you could say that about the best of all people. There are lousy Vulcans as well, you know, I'm sure. And so they and just pushing that through, so that they think, well, this is, you know, and then Starfleet going, well, this is a great plan. That we can now, I can't think about this episode apart from through that prism now, that the backstory that it's just all a big Tal Shiar set up. I wanted to just talk a little bit more about the relationship between the Romulan commander and Spock, and how that worked in respect to the final scene of the episode, or second to final scene of the episode, when they're in the turbo lift and she's, you know, under house arrest, so to speak, and they're having I think that that's a very nice, very warm exchange that they're having there. There's a lot of you know, resentment that she's feeling, because she feels as though she's being played, or does she?
All part of the game.
All part of it. And but that, I think what they were trying to convey is that Spock, were it not for this space between us kind of thing going on there, that the thing that they shared was sincere. This is a bit of a spy trope, I think, anyway, sometimes. So, it's a kind of, you know, yes, at the beginning, you know, I was only interested, you know, in your plans for the battle station. But it soon it became more than that. Yeah. And, you know, I genuinely love you.
In
you
another
know.
World, I might have called you friend.
That kind of stuff.
As we've seen many times in James Bond.
Yeah.
You know, sort of, that sort of thing pops up all the time.
Yeah.
And Man from U.N.C.L.E., which would have been a big thing.
And Star Trek.
And Star Trek, yeah.
You know.
Does it say anything also to Spock's higher loyalty to to Starfleet or even to Kirk.
Well, it's quite interesting that the bit when she first interrogates him in, you know, right in the early part of the act, the second act, you know, the bit where after talking to Kirk and he's taken away and she wants to speak to Spock by himself, he self-identifies as being, you know, a Vulcan historically. Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to do that.
Derek is doing the Vulcan salute, yeah, while he's enunciating using the Vulcan salute.
But anyway, he actually put forward his Vulcan heritage as being the main, you know, thing that he defines himself by.
Yeah,
which could be a lie as well.
Yeah, could be a lie.
You know, because obviously he's a Star Trek officer, you know, Starfleet officer.
Yeah,
and, you know, and he's.
But he's selling this by being himself, I think.
Yeah.
I think he's able to sell this because he's not a spy. No. He's a scientist.
And I think that's, you know, he's not actually a spy, the craft of the writing of this episode is.
Yeah.
Is that where everyone else is being a spy, he's playing it ostensibly completely straight.
Yeah.
And showing you can play it completely straight.
Yeah, absolutely.
And still get away with
it. But he's able to compartmentalise a part of the set. It's like, everything I'm telling you is true, apart from this one thing which is not true, which is actually the fact that I'm not a traitor, that I am on a mission, I'm a spy right now, you know, I'm trying to play you. But everything else, and this is the secret to espionage, isn't it? That's what they say about people who are spies, is that they're able to function in a world... in an environment, you know, with complete authenticity, and allow themselves to be part of that, because the higher truth about who and what they are and what they're is kind of compartmentalised in their brain, and they're able to reconcile.
Yeah.
So they don't feel like complete shit because they're betraying all these people that they come to know.
And the old spying trope of the easiest place to hide the truth is in a pack of lies.
Yes.
Conversely, the easiest place to hide the lie is in a lot of truth.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, if you think about it, it's the only way you can exist as a spy, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
You'd have to be able to say, actually, in many, many meaningful ways, I'm very happy here, I like it here, I love all these people, but I am against them, I'm their enemy, and, you know, I'm here to destroy them, you know, or to damage or injure them in some way. And it's the only way I think that you could reconcile that. And it is, again, it's all in the quality of the writing. This is such a wonderfully crafted episode, and of course, yeah, ends how it ends with a chase, and a relatively satisfying denouement, and everything's come out, and it almost feels like a bit of a Mission Impossible episode when it got there. Some nice points. I mean, Kirk with the ears and the eyebrows, the surgery, looks nice. He looks really good in that. And I thought that I enjoyed that, the journey that Kirk took in that, you know, from being this kind of raving lunatic at the beginning, you know, to then sort of like reasserting control and being back in command, coming back on the bridge, and everyone's like, oh my God, you're alive. And he's like, yep, it's fine. Everything's under control. And sits down. And I quite enjoyed that aspect to it. I thought he this is definitely Spock's episode, but I thought he played a superb supporting role in the story as well.
Yeah. I mean, definitely a solid piece of work from Shatner there as well, sort of like as an actor.
Yeah. And Scotty as well.
And Jimmy Scotty's Doohan. Good. That's he does some good speeches.
Because I mean, a lot of how he reacts, again, I mean, like, there's that speech he does where he says, I'm not going to buy, you know, this ship is commanded by Anna and we're not leaving, and if you try and board us, we'll blow up, and all of that. Very nice, defiant.
Yeah.
But I mean, he was given the opportunity to turn around and go, or to surrender the ship. And another commander, another person might say, I've got to think about the safety of the ship.
Yeah.
But in fairness, as when Kirk was... Because Kirk leaves, says to Scotty, if all else fails, you have to destroy yourselves. He doesn't say, if all else fails, you get the option to save lives, then surrender the ship and save lives. He says, no, you have to destroy yourself. Scotty could conceivably have gone, maybe actually that isn't the right thing to do. Maybe I don't want to kill all these people. Maybe I should surrender. And he could have done it. It's not out of the question.
No, that's true. Mm-hmm.
Not out of the question at all. But but Kirk is relying on Scotty, as after having known him and how he's going to react. And so the setup of the caper is tenuous. An awful lot can go wrong. but at the same time, it's just solid enough for it to be credible as a caper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's not a completely... It's a dangerous mission, probably a very, very high percentage failure rate, failure possibility, but it is an achievable caper. Yeah. And again,
and in the
good
realms
quality writing.
Of a 45-minute television show, then, it fits well.
It's gripping as well. Throughout, I mean, all of the, you know,
There's no wasted scenes.
No,
really.
No. Considering that there are scenes that slow down the pace quite markedly.
Yeah.
But without making it seem ploddy.
No.
And that's the strength of it. And that's right. That shows you someone who's actually a script editor writing the story.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because
it's not had to be hacked about to try to make it.
It's interesting because, of course, she wasn't the script editor for this episode because Dorothy Fontana had left she wrote this episode almost as a freelancer. That and The Way to Eden, I think, are the two contributions that she made to the third season. And so she had no influence on the post-production on it at all, as far as I know. Or anything like that. She just submitted the script, and it's a testimony just to how tightly...
Yes.
Put together it is. And yeah, you're right, there are some, I mean, like the scenes in the Roman and Commander's quarters, they're a little bit long but not too long. It's never just quite, and you know, and you need a little bit of time to establish that relationship as well. And I enjoyed Spock's right of statement thing. I enjoyed the whole filibustering thing as well. I thought that was a good touch, but it all is lovely now to think that it's all been done actually by all of Tal Shiar Incorporated.
I mean, if you want to bring this into sort of the Star Trek canon with Romulus, you know, and stuff like this, surely he you know, Spock, when he was doing his rite of confession or whatever,
rite of statement,
you know, he's actually admitted to all of these crimes. So later on in The Next Generation, will there still be a warrant out on him for those things he admitted to?
Well, that's interesting, because he does go to, he moves to Romulus, doesn't he, to start.
What's the statute of limitation on Romulus?
Well, I would imagine that there is no.
Remember, sort of like Romulans and Vulcans actually are longer lived than human beings as well.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, I mean...
Yeah, because it's interesting, because of course, I mean, if you go to the Star Trek 09 movie, Spock is trying to help the Romulans prevent the supernova that destroys them. Obviously fails to do so. But, I mean, so at some point they must have reconciled between now and then.
And whether
either that or they just forgot about the whole thing.
But also whether he actually met the Romulan commander again.
Yeah. Well, again, she turns up in this sequel. I mean, it's a comic book. It's written in 2008. I mean, it's quite good. It's authentic Dorothy Fontana, so it's canon. Yeah.
I did actually see the actress who played the Romulan commander, who hasn't got a name, because we
know the character doesn't.
Even though she does
a whispered name,
she whispered her name to Spock, doesn't she? So, you know, it's probably Bert.
How rare and beautiful.
Beautiful, yes.
Bert.
But funny enough, the actress, her daughter, was in a recent Star Trek Continues. You know, the fan. Was it TV?
Yeah, because they did a sequel to it there, didn't they?
Yeah, and she played the Romulan.
So Joanne Linville, of course, is the actress, as we've said before. I had the pleasure of seeing Joanne Linville at a recent Star Trek convention when she turned up as a guest, and I mean, she's in her 90s now. And she took no shit from anybody.
Yeah. Like a Romulan commander should.
She went on, she was an established television and stage actress at the time, continued to be an established television and stage and screen actress for many years to come. And not an A-list actress by any means, but well established. And Graham, I think you said that, I mean, she taught acting.
Yeah, she wrote a book.
Wrote a book.
In her 80s, she wrote a book about acting, about the acting craft.
Yes.
One of her star pupils is Mark Ruffalo.
Right.
Who actually gives a glowing review of the book as well. So, yeah. So working well into her old age. And I think she was well, she celebrated her birthday this week as we're
recording. Yeah, she just started as we're recording, yeah, absolutely.
92 years old?
Yes, she is.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow,
so, indeed. You know, yeah, she's had a good career. I mean, she's appeared in, obviously, like a lot of mainstay American actors, she's appeared in things like the Twilight Zone and stuff like that we particularly like. But she also appeared with Kate Mulgrew when Kate Mulgrew was in, played Mrs. Columbo.
Really?
Yeah.
So in Columbo?
No, there was a TV series called Mrs. Columbo, which Kate Mulgrew played Mrs. Columbo.
I've never heard of this TV show.
It was only one series.
I'm not surprised.
Well, there you go.
A ropey premise setup. Okay, yeah, fair enough. So, yeah. All right, okay, yeah. Cool.
So there you go, another little Star Trek nugget there.
Well, I mean, she was majestic and great casting, it should be said. Yeah. And superb chemistry between the two, and it worked really, really well. Just to also, technical footnote, Alexander Courage. This is an original soundtrack to this episode.
Ah,
and it's one of the few original soundtracks to this episode. And by Alexander Courage, the composer of the original series theme, and of course the composer. And so it also has, I think, for me, an extra layer of authenticity as well, because it's a Sandy Courage soundtrack as well, and it's a fairly decent one as well. It all gets a bit funny in the third season. Third season soundtrack's all a bit slightly stranger, but each season has its own distinctive soundtrack, because they had so few, they only commissioned a small number of episodes to have original soundtracks, so then the music editor just like then took them and used them over and over and over and over again. And of course, for the third season, that's one of the few ones. And so, yes, we hear this quite a lot, but it does give each season its own separate sound.
Mm-hmm.
It all sounds differently. So season one sounds different to season two, to season three. At least in my ears, anyway, because I pay attention to these things. Other people pay less attention to the background music.
I presume
music
the budget was cut quite a bit for the first
series. Yeah.
Well, you can see that in the sets, can't you?
Yeah.
Which is one of the disappointing things about this episode, is the fact that it's using all Enterprise.
Yeah, it's just
for
ever so slightly redressed, relit.
Lit green, basically,
isn't it? So, indeed. But we're not here to point out the numerous technical issues with these, we're here to celebrate them. But you are right, of course. And the bridge, the woman and bridge is like really, you know, sort of like, well, that's just auxiliary control, maybe.
Yeah,
it's been redressed. I suspect. Yeah, it's just a room. Yeah, it's an office. it's like a WeWork office or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. They're sharing it with a startup in the corner, aren't they?
But anyway, we chose this episode also partly because we are on the eve of Star Trek Picard, which is about to kick off. You'll almost certainly be listening to this. Our podcasts are intended to be evergreen, but we wherever possible we try and be topical, because it's going to be a big Romulan series, Picard. And this is a big Romulan episode. It's a defining Romulan episode. And
yeah.
We haven't really talked too much about that aspect of it, but we can have that conversation another time. So I think we've probably exhausted it. Are there any more blistering takes that are left?
The only thing that this actually goes into Star Trek II, actually, when we introduced the Savik, who was a Vulcan and Romulan heritage. You know, I always had this little thing at the back of my mind that maybe she was Spock's daughter and the commander.
Interesting.
If they had enough time.
Did they have enough time?
The love child.
Yeah, it would have been a cool thing.
Okay,
but.
So this I'm now going to gross you out with that, because in some original fiction, not fan fiction, original fiction, Spock and Savik get married. Which is massively creepy and inappropriate. I mean, even before thinking that they might be. I mean, it was far the father daughter thing is far more likely than the fact that the pair of them become lovers. It's a bit. Anyway, it's an arm of original fiction that we don't have to consider. But all right then. Well, that's the Enterprise incident. And we're going to do a new episode, record an episode very shortly about another great Dorothy Fontana episode, which is This Side of Paradise, and we'll be talking about that presently. But I don't think we have anything further that we want to say about that. Aside too, obviously, just to pay homage to Dorothy Fontana and just to re-emphasise her impact and her importance on the Star Trek franchise, and how we really wouldn't be having these kind of conversations without her labours, I think. So, may she rest in peace, and we and may we continue to enjoy Star Trek well into our dotage. Until the next episode, from myself, Terry, and from Derek and from Graham, it's goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.